I experienced a lot of dullness while doing that. I entered that state where you're almost asleep, but not quite. Is that a common thing? Did anybody have that?
That's really common usually for the first day or so.
Okay.
You had that too?
Actually, I had I was kind of soaring and flying in colors. I had quite a journey when I was doing that.
Oh, that's good.
I had a great journey.
That's wonderful. Were there others that had dullness? Did you have dullness?
I would say probably a lot of the day I did those.
A lot of the day.
Still catching up on sleep.
Well, I think you'll all see an improvement in that tomorrow, but I hope you took advantage of the opportunity to practice working with dullness today. I mean, it's an important thing, and the more you work with it, the sooner you get to that point where it will almost never be a problem anymore. So, look at it that way. Always regard dullness, the occurrence of dullness, from the positive perspective. All right, I'm going to train my mind so it just doesn't do this to me anymore.
Well, remind us of the techniques.
Yes.
Okay, well, so... I offered the techniques many times, and it's always a really good teaching technique to ask the students to present what they've learned. So, I'll ask someone else to review the methods for overcoming dullness, and I'll offer my comments as you go along. Would you like to begin? I don't mean to put you on the spot. But.
Well, I know you didn't mean to, but you did. Well, I had to keep opening my eyes because I kept drifting off into all kinds of things. It was even felt like we were it wasn't about any particular thing, but I would open my eyes and then I would remember to do a lift, just moving the energy up. And then going back to the breath, of course.
And that worked?
The major thing. It did help a lot.
And did that bring you completely back to a state of alertness?
Well, from time to time it did. But from time to time it didn't.
Okay. So.
It seemed like a very, for me, really dull. It was even worse than dull. I had this feeling, you're not even meditating as well as you did when you first started meditating 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I began to sort of attack myself.
Wow.
And then I had to deal with that.
Okay.
And,
Okay, so, others can help you. So, what's sort of the number one rule about how to deal with dullness once it's present?
To tighten the object, the attention on the object?
Well, that if that is sufficient to meet the criteria of the number one rule. The number one rule is to employ an antidote to the dullness. And there's a very important criteria for knowing whether you've applied a strong enough antidote or not. Yes?
3 minutes.
What's that?
The 3 minute.
Yeah, it should make you fully alert and hold off dullness for at least 3 to 5 minutes. If it doesn't, if you have the experience called sinking, where you bring yourself back up and then in less time than that, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, a minute, you find yourself, being pulled back under, then you didn't employ a strong enough antidote. So what you're looking for is something to something to completely pull you out of the dullness. And the 3 to 5 minute standard is how we judge that we indeed succeeded in pulling ourselves out of it. Because the process that takes place in the brain that causes this dullness and sleepiness to come back if it does come back, it will take a few minutes for it to take hold again once you completely arouse the brain. And so that's our standard. You try to wake yourself up for 3 to 5 minutes, doing whatever is necessary. But if not, if opening your eyes is enough, great. But if it's not enough, if you try that and you find yourself sinking, then do something stronger. And what are other examples of something stronger than opening your eyes? Or you mentioned tightening up your focus on the meditation object. And that's good for very subtle dullness. Opening your eyes is for when dullness is a little bit stronger. But what are some of the other ones?
Well, I'll tell you what I did, and it probably doesn't fit in any one of those categories.
Okay, that's fine. If it's a good one, I'll add it to my list.
I felt sort of, I wasn't calling it dullness. Mm-hmm. I had been sort of drifting off. But when this last sitting with the one before, when it ended, I just felt drained of any kind of energy. Ah. I really didn't want to move, and I felt like, so I did move, and I got up and I went out, and I walked a little bit, and then what really cleared for me and brought energy back, I sat on a log and picked bark off a little stick, very mindfully, and I felt energy come back, and I came back to the last sitting, and I wasn't sure I could come back for the last one, because I might never leave again. I mean, I was feeling that heavy, and energy just,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because when you sit for a while in dullness, that's exactly what you'll find, even when you get up and walk around. If you've sat in dullness for a while, you have this, really dull, out of it state of mind. You feel like there's a big fog there, and it takes a while to shake off. So, now that's good to know about, because sometimes we can sit in dullness, and because our mind's not wandering, and because we might be feeling really kind of comfortable, we can think, oh, I'm having a really good meditation. But if at the end of that seemingly wonderful meditation, if you get up and you feel like your brain's in a fog, that's the result of sitting in dullness. So it's a good thing to know. But what I was getting at are the antidotes that you use. Okay, you've sat down. It's 10 or 15 minutes into the sit. You've got at least another half hour to go. What do you do to rouse yourself? What are some of the ways?
Well, actually, I had a nice time with the music, but the rest of the day was suffering. It was very difficult. So I'm glad you shared what you did. I actually started counting backwards.
So you started counting your breath?
That sounds stupid.
Counting backwards.
But I was getting so all over the place, and I was trying to deep breath, and I was just really having a hard time finding out where I was, or not me, wasn't.
Okay. Sometimes that kind of mental activity, if you understand the nature of dullness, it's what happens to the mind and the brain in the process of going to sleep. And of course, we can stop it sort of midway and sit there in a state of dullness, not really asleep, but it is exactly, precisely what happens every single time you go to sleep. And if you observe yourself going to sleep at night, and if you observe dullness in meditation, you'll discover that they're exactly the same thing. Now, the reason it happens is, the reason it happens in both instances is you've withdrawn your attention from all external sources of stimuli. And what keeps our brain and mind stimulated all day long is, all the things we're hearing and seeing and feeling and thinking, and all of our reactions to what we're hearing, seeing, thinking, feeling, and smelling and tasting too. Okay, that keeps stimulating the mind. And so when you sit down and close your eyes and become focused, if you become very focused, then it is very similar to what happens when you lay down in your bed at night, turn the light off, and close your eyes. You know, and withdraw your attention from the world, from the senses. And so it produces the same kind of result. On the simple act of focusing the attention on one thing that's not very interesting, when you're used to taking in all of this information from the outside, is going to predispose to dullness. And so, in general, all of those things that you do that are going to successfully counteract dullness are going to re-stimulate your brain and your mind. So, focus, if the dullness is very, very minor, it has to be very, very minor, very subtle, you can refocus your attention on the meditation object, take a renewed interest, maybe set yourself some goals that, you know, I'm going to clearly discern the entire range of sensations that make up the in-breath or the out-breath. If you can succeed in engaging at that level, that will overcome the dullness, but only if the dullness was very, very mild. Another method is just simply to expand your awareness from the breath to the whole body, to the sounds, to picture yourself in your mind, in your environment. Here you are in this yurt, in the mountains, people around you, you hear birds, things like that. This will awaken your mind. You can do that for a few minutes and then go back to practicing and see if that was a strong enough antidote. And if it was very subtle dullness, that will be a strong enough antidote. If it's stronger than that, though, you might need to do something like meditate with your eyes open. You're adding all this additional stimulus. And one of the most powerful senses in that regard is the sense of vision. Well, you already know this. It's hard to go to sleep with your eyes open, right? Although what will happen if you're having strong dullness and you start to experience sinking is your eyelids will feel like they've got heavy weights attached to them. Then you'll know you need to do something stronger. The other things that I suggested to you, and you can invent your own, but the idea is you're going to stimulate this body and this mind. So one of the things that does work, has a sound physiological basis for it, is taking a deep breath and expelling the air against resistance, like pursing your lips. And when you do that for several breaths, you'll probably have a physical sensation like the energy just moving up to your head. So that's one method. Another method that's about similar in potency to that is where you clench all of your muscles and hold them. You might hold them while you count to 10 or 15 or something, and then release them all at once. And repeat that a few times. You'll feel your body invigorated. What happens is there's a whole strip of your cortex on each side that is, you know, if you had an fMRI on your brain when you're sitting there tensing up, a whole central strip in the cortex on both sides will light up like a light bulb, and it'll overflow into the other regions of your cortex, and you feel invigorated and reawakened. If the dullness is really strong, that might only last, though, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, and you find yourself sinking again. So then you have to use stronger measures, which include things like standing up. Very quietly stand up and meditate standing up for a little while. Or sometimes it's really strong. You need to go beyond that and walk. Now, I know I told you, try not to enter and leave the meditation yurt except at bell time. So if you have dullness that's that strong, you may find yourself in a little quandary, but try meditating standing up. It will be very uncomfortable, but it will wake you up. And once you feel fully awake and you think it's good enough to last 5 minutes, so you sit back down again. When you're meditating at home and you have that kind of strong dullness, you can switch from sitting meditation to walking meditation for a little while. You can do meditative walking into the bathroom and splash cold water in your face, and then do meditative walking back to the cushion. In other words, just do whatever you have to do. So that's rule number one. Do whatever you need to do to rouse yourself sufficiently that you have that 3 to 5 minute window before the dullness comes back again. Number two is don't react emotionally to the dullness or the return of the dullness. When you experience dullness, it's an opportunity to practice training your mind not to enter into dullness. And when the dullness comes back, it's what is usually to be expected. It will usually take a number of interventions before that something snaps and you stay awake for the rest of the sit. But, you know, it will happen. Well, sometimes the bell rings before it's happened, and it seems like it hasn't happened, but it would have happened. Okay. Then the next important thing is, once you've recognized that this kind of dullness is present, once you've employed an antidote, and hopefully it's strong enough that you now have 3 to 5 minutes, in that period, then practice detecting the earliest signs of the return of dullness. And this is one of the advantages. When I say you're training yourself to deal with dullness, this is one of the reasons why you should say to yourself, oh good, I get to work on dullness today. Because it's very important to recognize the presence of dullness. And this takes practice. So if you're having an episode of dullness, every time you bring yourself out of it, it's going to come on again. And it's going to start out very subtle and get stronger and stronger and stronger. So your task is to try to notice it earlier than you have before, and in the process learn to detect the different signs of the onset of dullness, which are, anybody feel familiar with the signs of onset of
the object isn't as sharp?
That's right, yes. That's the first one, is the object loses its vividness, its intensity, the clarity of perception. It's the very first thing that you notice. And often you'll notice it sort of coming in and out. You know, it'll be there, and then it won't be there, and it'll be there, and then it'll be there less and less. Yeah, that's the first thing. And the next thing is, you'll tend to notice that even though you may not be aware of having lost clarity of the object, you recognize that you're in the moment, short-term memory isn't functioning the way it was before. You have these little experiences of, you know, not really being aware whether your breath is different compared to, say, the last one. You know, as the sutras say, when he breathes in a long breath, he knows it. Breathes out a long breath, knows it. So the only way you can know that is your short-term memory has to be working. And one of the things that you can train yourself to be aware of, well, you train yourself to be aware of the breath-by-breath changes in your breath. And, of course, the flip side of that is you have obviously trained yourself to become aware when you don't have that. And that decay in the quality of your short-term memory is a sign. Now, you might also be not sure, you'll have a moment of not being sure whether this is the in-breath or the out-breath. This does happen in one other circumstance, where the mind is now functioning non-conceptually, and in-breath and out-breath are labels that are put on. But unless you've been experiencing an extremely clear and bright meditation in which you've experienced sensations in their own right, independent of the mind's labels of them, that's not this experience. So when you find yourself not sure whether it's in or out breath, that can be another sign of dullness, of that loss of short-term memory. The other thing is distortions of the meditation object. It becomes something else. The breath becomes a wheel turning, a bird's flying, or some other sort of dreamlike hypnagogic imagery. you really know something, you really know you're slipping into dullness when that happens. And of course, beyond that point are all the easily recognizable stages. You're feeling heavy, you're slumping forward, you're feeling drowsy, noticeably drowsy, and things like that. Those are the kind of things to watch for. And if you watch and study and investigate the onset of dullness, well, you'll find other things that I haven't mentioned. And you'll find your own wonderful things that I've never even noticed, and you can tell me about them. But you get the idea. The more quickly you can notice dullness coming on, then the less of an antidote that it takes to overcome it. And if you practice in this way every time you have dullness, then your experience will become one of rarely experiencing dullness. When you do, noticing it and countering it early and not having it persist too long. I rarely experience dullness, but if I don't get enough sleep, something like that, you know, then I will. But I usually, even if I haven't had enough sleep, I can overcome it pretty quickly. There was a night not too long ago that I was at the center, and for whatever reason, I don't know what it was, I couldn't sleep very well that night. I basically didn't sleep much at all. And that doesn't happen often, but here I had these 3 45-minute sits on Friday morning. And the first one, I had dullness coming on, but I recognized it and I countered it. And by the second and third sits, I was fine. So that's how you can come to expect to be with dullness. But to get to that place, you have to practice. And you have to know what you're doing and practice in a systematic way. What you're doing is you're training your mind. You're training your mind so that when you become focused, when you withdraw your senses from the external world, it doesn't do the usual thing. You're training your mind to make a distinction between, oh, this is not bedtime, this is meditation time. I mean, really, literally, that's exactly what you're doing. So that your mind, your brain and your mind distinguish two different situations and responds in two different ways in the future. And then the other thing you're doing, of course, is training your own ability to recognize and to counteract the dullness when it's there.
Well, I wasn't feeling so much sleepiness as vague things moving through my mind, you know, just...
A dreaminess?
Kind of, yeah. Something like that.
Okay, well, that's good. Let me point something out to you. When you begin to meditate, usually when dullness comes on, it progresses and you end up, you know, having the Zen lurch experience. As you've been meditating longer, and as you've acquired, as you've trained your mind pretty well not to do this, what will happen instead is that your mind will learn to stop at certain levels in the process and dwell there. And so you can stop in that dreamlike, that it's called the hypnagogic state, where you have dreamlike images. And you can train your mind to stop there. And if you do, you can have some fantastic little visions, and, you know, all kinds of, and some people quit practicing meditation, they sit down and enter into that state and have nice little visions. And it's not what we're here to do. You know, it's not the best thing to do. Prior to that is that level of dullness where your meditation object has lost its clarity. But the other thing, actually, you can add this to the list of signs of onset of dullness, that if you're not at this moment entering in a state of single-pointedness, and you lose the awareness of your body and sounds around you, just in the sense that they're fading and indistinct and things like that. In the subtle state of dullness, along with losing the vividness and clarity of perception, you also lose most of the awareness of distracting sensations, and you have fewer thoughts in your mind, many fewer thoughts in your mind. What to compare this with? You know, if you have a flashlight beam shining on that thing over there, if the bulb is really bright, it's going to light up things around it. As the bulb becomes dimmer and dimmer, the light is only on what's in the middle, right? So as and when subtle dullness comes on, you'll have that experience, and it can be easily mistaken for single focus, a single-pointed focus. And because in that state, your mind generates fewer thoughts. As a matter of fact, you tend to have more imagery and fewer verbal thoughts in that state. Because of that, it can be easily mistaken for the meditative state where the mind calms and quiets and you don't have as many thoughts. So your mind can learn to enter into this subtle state and just rest there without going the rest of the way into sleepiness. And that's another one of those traps, because you'll feel like, oh boy, I was really focused. I had a good meditation, but there wasn't any awareness there. And the quality of the concentration you experienced was due more to dullness than mental training. And so it was more the illusion of good concentration than the reality of it. So I won't belabor this point, but just to point out to you that the mind can learn to stop at these intermediate stages without going into sleepiness. But that's what you were describing, when you have that sort of hypnagogic, dreamy-like state. And it can be sustained. And you can sit there and have that go on for 45 minutes or an hour sometimes.
I had another feeling, too. It felt like this group was so together in a way. I felt that we were very synergistic. Uh-huh. I don't know if anybody else had that feeling, but... And it might have been just my imagination, but I felt that we maybe were kind of flowing in and out with mm-hmm. each other,
yeah.
with each other's meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And that never occurred to me before, but it did today of having that experience. So I don't know.
Are you saying you felt like you were connecting with the other?
I did. I felt like... Maybe some of these things were coming to me, were coming from somebody else, and that I was, you know, that we were all sort of interacting here together in our meditations. I don't know if anybody else thought about that or felt that.
Well, I would say most likely that was happening. And this is something that I have a lot of interest in, and the state you were in is exactly where that can happen, when you enter into that dreamlike state. What it's like is though the mechanisms of your mind that keep you mentally separate, or at least keep your perception mentally separate from other minds, or from what we might call the mind. That breaks down, that becomes weakened. That is actually the same state that shamans enter into when they're doing shamanic journeying. And in that state, they seem to connect with an aspect of big M mind that's quite separate than little M mind that we live with in ordinary daily life. I think it's also what we tap into when we have prophetic dreams. I think it's also what we tap into when we have past life memories. And it's also what we tap into if we have the experience of knowing the mind of another or knowing the thoughts of another. And I think it's something that probably happens with all of us more often than we realize when we're sleeping and dreaming, and perhaps when we're awake in some of these in-between states. And so my feeling, my belief, based on my experience and the things that I'm actively pursuing right now in my practice, is that that's probably exactly what it was. You probably had enough dullness to open you up, and there were other people with enough dullness that they were open too, and it probably was a very real back and forth from that. The same thing seems to happen, you know, people often say that they like to come and meditate with me because they have much better meditations. That's not about me personally, because you find this often said with people who are skilled meditators and have meditated for a long time, you know, like Brian and other people like that, is when people meditate with other skilled meditators, they feel like they have better meditations. I think it's the same phenomenon. And it's also one of the benefits that we get when we meditate in a group. It's like if we can, and this will probably help us by tomorrow or the next day, as you all sort of get into the groove and you're all being good meditators, you're all going to reinforce each other's practice. So.
I was really, really happy to see how everybody came, every one of the six, except when they were down there.
Okay.
I'm really impressed with you.
That's good, yes. I honor you for that. So, now, do you feel like I answered your questions or adequately commented on your comments?
Yes, they're very helpful.
Okay. Yes?
I have a question of protocol.
Yes.
A couple of times during the walking meditation, I walked inside a half circle. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah? And did it bother anybody?
Or were people sitting inside when you did that?
There were a couple of people sitting here, so I was concerned that they may be bothered by my walking.
Okay. Well, that is the one thing to be very legitimately concerned about, because there can be little shifts in the floor and little sounds which will be a distraction to somebody. But if it didn't bother you?
I didn't even hear her. Yeah. I saw her, but I didn't hear her at all.
Good. Okay. Well, then just read people's minds to make sure it's all right. And I'm not very
I thought I was being very quiet, but I didn't. You know, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't distracting.
So, I have invited people to sit and walk pretty much as they wish, so that everybody's not necessarily sitting and walking at the same time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in the afternoon especially, it can be very hot to walk outside, and you prefer to walk in here. So,
the bones are distracting.
Yeah. So, well, just practice super degree of thoughtfulness and consideration, and that should be all right. Yes, Cynthia.
I don't know if this is a question that it's right to ask, but most of my training, like my whole life in meditation, has to do with visualization and feeling others, and you're saying like it's hypnagogic, and you know, using mental energy or whatever it is to perceive all sorts of different things and feel how people are in the room, which is really a problem for me with a group, because I feel that when it's working well, it feels really good, but if it's something's off, then I have trouble with my focus, not blaming anybody, but because I just have that. But so there's, you know, I've done this just, you know, a little bit with you, enough to have like just a, maybe this tiny taste that when I sit long enough and get through something so different happens that is not any of that I don't know really what it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it really is going to go. But could you discuss where it's going to go? Okay. Because it's I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if I'm framing that.
Yeah.
But it's,
okay.
Can you repeat that question for the recording? Uh-huh. That's such a good question.
Well, the question was, where is this going?
But I didn't understand what this was.
I'm just thinking of, because I'm my modest experiences that don't involve all the things that I have been familiar with from other training, and where things, mostly to me it's like, I don't even know if colors is the right word, but it feels like, does it feel like a frequency or a depth, a largeness, you know, these different, a light, well, it's not really light, but it's a, you know, well, for me it's like a tactile difference that's like, that I've just had a little taste of, saying, wow, this is so different from anything else I've experienced from anything. You probably, it's your experience, but it's like a sort of like today I was like wanting to move into this kind of like what I would call like this next step, like I've tasted it on another retreat and where else is that going to go? And then just when you're talking about the kinds of sensations that are very familiar to me that Allegra is talking about that are just like second nature, but this part in this kind of practice certainly isn't, and with this kind of focus, and how, and is there a way, I mean, I'm sort of, I guess I'm asking for a clue or a hint or a technique to what that would feel like or look
did,
like.
Did you follow her better this time? And I'll summarize it for the recording. So it's as compared to visualization practices, which often involve or result in you getting into a sort of hypnagogic state. It's almost like lucid dreaming where you're doing a visualization, so you're controlling the hypnagogic imagery, but you're getting into that same state. As compared to that, this is different. Mm-hmm. And you tasted some of that difference, but you would like a little more explanation as to where it goes. So let me first of all define what the essence of this practice is. It has the two aspects of attentional stability, concentration is the word that we usually use, and the other is mindful awareness, fully conscious awareness, and the ways then that you can use them. So what this practice is about is being in a very heightened state of awareness compared to where we usually are. Being much more fully conscious, fully aware, fully awake than we normally are. And that is combined with a mind that is trained to be very stable and peaceful. So essentially what happens is as you attain a certain degree of attentional stability, you begin to experience a calming of the mind. You know, it's not jumping around so much. There's not so many thoughts. There's not so many distractions. They become less common. And if you've been practicing properly, at the same time, the power of your mindful awareness is becoming stronger. And the way that I would describe what's taking place here is that the many different parts of your mind are normally doing many different things. And they're not really working in harmony. Some part of your mind's worrying about this, and some other part of your mind is lusting after that, and some other part of your mind is, you know, whatever. I don't have to tell you. All these different parts of your mind. They're sort of like, if you can imagine, a great big symphony orchestra, you know, and the tuba section has decided that they're going to do Sousa marches, but the flutes and piccolos are into Mozart, and so they're all playing different tunes, and so the result is very confusing, cacophony, and you can follow one thread for a while, and then you lose it, and you follow another, and, you know, it's sort of like that. That's sort of what our minds are like. So you can think of this training in attentional stability is sort of like getting all the different parts of the orchestra on the same page, playing the same tune at the same time. And as you get better and better at it, they actually start not only playing the same piece of music, but they're actually in time with each other. And then, of course, you have the experience of the full power of the orchestra rather than it being diminished by those parts of the orchestra that weren't cooperating. It's the same thing with your mind. So you experience a unification of your mind that is brought about by training in attentional stability, and manifests subjectively as fewer thoughts that have nothing to do with what you're doing in the moment, which is practicing, and less experience of being distracted by sounds or bodily sensations or things like that. And so as the whole thing starts to function in harmony, your mind becomes a beautifully placed, peaceful place. As the power of all of these different parts of your mind begins to work in coordination, synchronization, you experience that in terms of a sense of awareness that just simply goes beyond your ordinary experience, and it's quite wonderful and attractive. What you can do with this, once you begin to experience it, there are several different possibilities. One, you mentioned touching upon a sort of, I don't remember your words, but a sort of expansiveness or openness. And this is normal. And this is a direction you can choose to go in. And there's actually two different ways you can use that. One that I think is the best, is you train yourself to open up your awareness to anything and everything, but you keep your mind, I shouldn't say your mind, you keep your, well, let's say your mind, your attention, completely still. It's totally still. And anything that's there is just passing through it. And no matter what passes through, it doesn't jar your mind. It doesn't cause it to move or change or anything else like this. And this takes practice. We've tasted it. When you can experience that state more often, then you can practice staying in that state, and you'll notice that as things pass through your mind, the tension for your mind, instead of staying open, to want to contract about around one thing or another. And so you detect that contraction, and you let go of it. And so as soon as you become aware that your mind's beginning to contract around a particular thought or sensation, you let go of that. You just open your mind up again. And you practice until you can do this as soon as something comes into your awareness. Before your mind even starts to contract around it, you're already letting go of it. And when you come to that state, your mind can stay completely still and whatever you want passes mm-hmm. through it. Then, wonderful thing about, and this is sort of about the point of where all of these practices go, but in that one particular variation, you come to the point where you can examine and make a distinction between the mind and the contents of consciousness that are rising and passing away. You see, you know, and you'll have the experience of the mind at rest when there's nothing particular there, and the mind that's in the process of generating an object. And you can compare the two, and you can investigate the two. You can investigate the nature of objects of consciousness, and you can investigate the nature of the mind itself. You know, and you can, what you're on the track of here is discovering the nature of reality, the meaning of emptiness, especially the emptiness of the mind. And you know, this is getting towards the end of the goal. And that's just one of the branches of the practice. What you want to do is get to this unified state, attentional stability, and a high level awareness, and then you can use it in several other ways. Now, there's another way that you can use it, which is that you allow this mobile attention to, as things are arising and passing away, whatever the mind is drawn towards, then you apply the full force of the mind to it, and you hold on to it, and you watch its arising and its passing away. And then you move on to whatever else it is, and then you move on to whatever else it is. And this becomes a very powerful practice of seeing the rising and passing away. Now, if you do this, what really makes it powerful is, for example, there's a sensation, and then there's the mental process of knowing what that sensation is. You know, the distinction between a sensation and the labeling, or between rupa and the nama that follows it. And so now what you're doing is you're watching, and in this case we would regard a thought as another sensation. Because the way it appears to you when your mind is very, very clear is that thoughts just kind of bubble up out of nothing, like, you know, something rising out of a hole in the ground. It just rises up in front of you. And it's not really different in the way you experience it when you're able to examine it directly from a sound. You know, a sound just appears in your mind and expands and dies away. And same thoughts do the same thing. But in both cases, we regard the knowing of the experiencing of the thought and the experiencing of the sensation as different kinds of sensations. But you'll see when you have this kind of clarity of mind that every such experience of sensation is followed like that by the labeling of it and the identifying of it. And so you can watch these and you can see they both pass away. And you come to understand the impermanence of both objects and of the mind that knows the objects. Actually, all of the vipassana practices are using this stability of attention. You know, and don't believe any vipassana teacher who tells you you don't need concentration. The stability of attention and the mindful awareness for the investigation of reality. Other vipassana practices involve systematically any object your mind takes to basically follow the steps of dependent origination as described by the Buddha, which is when there is a sensation, you know, this is where some sensible object comes together with the sense organ and consciousness. So it's contact, produces a feeling, the feeling gives rise to craving, the craving gives rise to clinging. And so you practice seeing that. When you have this kind of mind, you can do this. You can, you know, if something comes up and you can just follow it one step after another. You can, you see that there is the sensation, the feeling, the craving, the clinging, and you come to understand the truth in a very profound way through doing that. Another way when you have this kind of powerful awareness and attentional stability is that you can do jhana practices, which is going the opposite direction from this expansive awareness and being very focused on something and becoming totally absorbed into it. So I could go into, I've gone into more detail than I need to already.
I find that really interesting and helpful.
Yeah. So this is what we're really after at the stage that you're at is to finish cultivating this concentration and awareness so that now a wide possibility of practices opens up to us. Now the first one I mentioned is what's known as Mahamudra in the Tibetan tradition, and it has other names elsewhere. And the others I was describing are different versions of Theravada Vipassana practices. Of course, you can do the emptiness and calm abiding practice, which is another Tibetan. You can, once you've got to this point, all of the good possibilities open up. So that's where you're going.
Great. I thought you had 45 minutes of that.
Sorry, I do get carried away.
No, that was great. That was really good.
Yes?
So, what you were just describing, I feel like my concentration is much better. And I guess my question is, it seems like I can be in the state just totally with what's arising and passing and just following it, you know, very there. And I think the question that's coming up for me is sometimes that leads to, you know, pleasure and like an opening, and sometimes it doesn't. It's just kind of observing it. And right. So is there something, would you recommend doing something to bring more pleasurable, you know, more satisfaction to that process? Because sometimes I just, you know, a thought will go into my mind, okay, so why? At the back of my mind, okay, so I'm observing this, I'm totally with it, and that's a resistance, and I can let go even in seeing that. But I'm wondering if there's something that would be helpful, or is that not something to be concerned about.
You do want to cultivate the happy, joyful state of mind that arises, and it will. I mean, what you want to do is nurture it, but it will. It ultimately is going to arise more and more strongly on its own. So you're talking about sometimes that's not there.
It's just, sometimes the joy is not. I mean, sometimes it just feels like there's just this ease and letting go, and it's joyful. And then sometimes it just feels kind of like that. But it can go on, like it almost is like almost like an indifferent, a bland. It's just not joyful. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it that way. I don't know how else to say.
Okay. Do you think it's possible that, just reflect for a moment, that in those times where there is less joy, there might be more striving, and where there's more joy, it might be more of a sense of ease?
Yeah, in general.
Because...
Yeah, that is definitely seems to be the biggest thing that I'm dealing with right now.
Well, if in what and in the stage that I describe as the seventh stage is one where you're on the verge of effortless concentration. Your ability to concentrate is really, really good, and the mind is becoming unified, but it hasn't quite completely gelled to the point where you don't have to be vigilant and on guard to prevent distractions from coming or dullness from coming. And it's a very interesting stage because it can have periods that are very dry. That's the way I describe them, as dry. And I experienced those for a long time. I'd meditate and my concentration is really good. I mean, couldn't be any better than this, but hey, nothing's happening. No joy, no music, no fireworks, you know. And it's kind of disappointing. And then there's other times where, which I didn't have very much of, but you're having, so most people do have, where the joy starts to seep through, and you begin to feel it, but you can't quite count on it. And that is where it is, at this stage, the transition from single-pointed concentration that's dependent upon effort and vigilance to the next stage, which is effortless concentration. That's the transition. And you'll have to remain vigilant sometimes because your mind is not fully settled. But there's other times when you don't have to, but you already have the habit of it, and that's hard to stop. And then there's other times, for whatever reason, you just sit there and you enjoy a certain degree of effortlessness and the joy starts to come through. So you see what... I don't know if you followed what I'm saying. But
yeah.
In the beginning of the seventh stage, you can't really let go of the effort because you'll the quality of your meditation will slip back to earlier stages and the subtle distractions will come back. Okay, and that's sort of the first half of the seventh stage is just keep sitting single-pointedly until, and making the effort until you don't need to make the effort anymore. And then the second half of the seventh stage is learning to stop making an effort that you don't need anymore. Maybe it would help you to know that in the Tibetan system they speak of there being five problems. The first problem, you know, as you go through the stages of learning to meditate, the first problem is laziness. We overcome that learning to practice regularly. And then the second problem is forgetting. That's the mind wandering. And we overcome that through remembering. And then the third problem is scattering. And that's in the fourth and fifth and sixth stages, you're overcoming the scattering of the mind to distractions and to dullness, even though you're not losing the meditation object. You're not forgetting anymore. You got past forgetting at stage three. 4, 5, and 6 are about getting past scattering. Now, the next two are really interesting. Problem number 4 is the problem of not doing, and the solution is doing. Now, that's describing what happens in the seventh state, where if you don't make the effort, the quality of your concentration disintegrates. The fifth problem is the problem of doing, and the solution is not doing. Right? And that's the point. You're on the boundary between these two. Like, there will be days when your problem would be not doing, and so you have to do to maintain your concentration. And there might not be as much joy in that. Then there's other days where your problem is doing, and what you need to do is learn to not do. And on those days, to the degree that you accidentally or otherwise succeed in not doing, you'll experience the joy. And to the degree that you don't recognize that you don't have to try quite so hard, you'll find it a dry experience without that moisture of the joy that you're looking for.
Very helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Okay, we've gone past the time for me to shut up. So, it's probably enough verbalization to disturb your minds for this 24 hours. So let's take a break, stretch, go to the washroom, and when you come back, we'll sit together until 9 o'clock. Okay? Thank you very much for your wonderful questions, the discussion, your comments. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too.